Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hello, 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 everybody.
Hi.
I'm Stephen.
I'm Paul.
Welcome to Living Villa Capelli.
Welcome.
Yay.
Benvenuti a casa.
Si. Ciao a tutti. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. See? Wow, I'm learning my Italian.
Wow, big time.
I know. This is a surprise episode for Paul. He doesn't know what we're doing yet.
Uh-oh.
So I've put the surprises for him.
I'm also blindfolded.
No,
I'm not.
You can still do a podcast blindfolded. No one would know.
I have a face for radio.
Oh, the first surprise is, because I keep forgetting about this. Guys, we have our sponsor, audible.com. So remember, you can get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial. Head to audible.com/Capelli. And that'll, you know, so when you sign up, you get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial. And there's tons of books, 180,000 books.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know about this. Was this the first surprise?
That's the first surprise.
Cool. Our first sponsor.
I was just thinking about that. You should do this because you drive around all the time.
Yeah.
You should just download audiobooks and listen to them.
Yeah.
I mean.
What a great idea.
Exactly. You should do that.
Hmm.
I mean, I think you would like, he doesn't get into podcasting.
Steven's saying that because he knows I can't read.
No, you just don't read much anymore. You would get into podcasting too.
I read on airplanes.
But he doesn't do the podcast thing. That's more me listening to the podcast. But anyway, he doesn't even listen to ours. Speaking of which, these are new surprises.
What is that? Audible.com?
Audibletrial.com/Capelli. So that's AUDIBLE. Trial, TRIAL, all one word, .com/Capelli. And you'll get free 30-day trial and a free...
Holy moly, I want one.
And free 30 days.
I'm signing up.
You should. yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Speaking of, though, our podcast, our wonderful listeners have gotten back to us with a few things, which I think was pretty cool. Guys, don't hesitate with any episode to let us know your thoughts, questions, comments. The first one is from Mia. All I have is Mia. I don't have any other information on that. But she answered our question, remember way back when? I don't have the episode in front of me. That's how professional I am. It was titled Italy's Best Sandwich Topper, and it's not ketchup. But we were trying to figure out what a, a versus a jam versus a conserve, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, right.
Remember?
Right.
Yes. Yep. So she wrote in and said, a jam is a thick mixture of fruit, pectin, and sugar that is boiled gently but quickly until the fruit is soft and has an organic shape, yet is still thick enough that it spreads easily and can form a blob.
Hmm.
In addition to being a spread, jams are also good for fillings. So it definitely with the pectin, yeah, that's what we were talking about, what jams are. She says, conserves are made using dried fruits and nuts and are cooked. They have a very thick and chunky texture. Conserves work very well as a spread and a condiment for meats and cheeses.
So would peanut butter be a conserve?
No. Maybe dry. Well,
it says nuts.
It's more of the nuts with the fruits. Remember you made that one time with the chutney. It's more like what I would call a chutney, sort of.
Okay.
I think that's what she's saying. But to me, this definition... Mia, you can correct me if I'm wrong again, but it's kind of our conserves are a little bit, we don't add pectin. We just do the fruit, the natural pectin that comes out of the fruit with the sugar. And ours isn't quite as, dense as a jam.
Right, it's not thick.
Yeah.
It's a little more runny because we don't add pectin.
And the conserves are definitely, I would consider the red onion jam and the bell pepper more of a conserve.
But she does it though, right?
She does. Uses a condiment for meats and cheeses, which is more of what the conserves are.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that, you know, I guess it's just a...
Is that it for
her?
Yeah,
that's it for her. Yeah.
Well, in our defense, I think my explanation for why we call them conserves, we call all of them conserves, by the way, is when we first started out, we were selling the jams, conserves, whatever you want to call them. We were selling them at Chelsea Market Basket in New York City, in Chelsea. And a friend of ours there who is the owner of Chelsea Market Basket, David Perrat. David, if you're listening. And he recommended we call them all conserves, especially, you know, we had orange marmalade. And he said, you know, marmalade sounds downscale. Jelly and Jam also sounds downscale. People like the sound of conserves, and that's basically why we call them conserves.
Yep.
For no other reason.
It's a marketing thing more than
it's
enough.
Marketing. Yeah.
I'm surprised he thinks marmalade is downscale. I don't think of it as downscale.
If you say it as with a British accent, it's upscale. It's marmalade.
Like marmalade.
Lady Marmalade.
Ooh, we watched a little bit of that movie that night. I forgot how great I love.
How much I love.
What's it called? Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I mean, obviously the song was before the movie, but anyway.
And last night we watched one of the best movies of all time, I think.
Did I watch all of it?
I don't know. You left early. American Beauty.
Oh, that was pretty damn good.
What an amazing, amazing.
I forgot how good it was. I forget how freaking young they all look.
Yes, but such great acting and amazing writing. The writing is just phenomenal.
What I kept thinking is, what happened to the boy? Because that's not Joaquin Phoenix, no.
Mm-mm. No,
he disappeared. The boy was so good.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like never did anything else.
Yep.
On another topic, this was on my episode with the Italian ways to fend off a cold. I'm not going to mention the last name because she didn't give me permission, but it's on. But Nicolette S. wrote in and said she was commenting on the Coppa d'Aria and how.
Colpo d'Aria.
Coppa d'Aria.
Colpo.
Colpo. Oh.
Colpo.
Colpo. Oh, colpo. Colpo. Dario.
Daria. Colpo d'aria. Aria is feminine.
But it's the fault of. It translates to basically the fault of the mistake of.
No, it's a hit of. Like a coup. Like a coup de grace.
Okay. She said that basically, I'm kind of summarizing because some of this is, but it says to be exposed to a sudden change of temperature causes the human body stress, and that lowers
immune system,
and this can make you more vulnerable to bacteria and viruses, and that's why Italians are so concerned to the wind, humidity, and cold. I have sort of heard this, but I've heard that it's not true, scientifically proven that it's not true.
Right, but I will admit that sometimes when I drive around in my car and I leave the window open a little bit, and I don't have like enough cover on the back of my neck, I do get kind of a stiff neck.
Oh my gosh, you've been living here way too long. Stop this already.
But I think a stiff neck is different than getting a cold.
Yeah, it says I know that. But yeah. that's what Coppa d'Aria is. Did I say it right again?
Colpo d'Aria.
Coppa d'Aria.
Colpo d'Aria.
Colpo d'Aria. Well, we're having our Italian lesson over on our podcast. is attributed to so much, though. That's the problem
when
I get it. But she also goes on to mention what they call vin brûlé. Which is basically what your mom was saying, but she added a little bit more. So this basically was what the cure I was talking about, guys, with the hot red wine. She says they add cinnamon, honey, cloves, and nutshells. And she says you sweat, cough, and all your phlegm and the day after your cold is over. So the nutshells is new for me. The cloves actually is true. Cloves is a very highly antiviral, antibacterial substance. It'll be careful when you do use it. Cloves, I would eat some yogurt the next day because it will clean out everything. It cleans out even supposedly parasites and everything else in your system. So
That's good to know. Yeah. But I guess you would have to strain that though.
I think you do it and then you strain. You strain
just the
it
nutshells.
Out.
Come on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know where the nutshells comes from. That's a new one for me.
I guess you just cook it in there and then strain it out.
Yeah, because it's cinnamon and all that stuff too. That's interesting. So that was two. Thanks, guys, for that. That was very cool.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yes. So and remember, there if you want to leave a voicemail, there is a little app when you go to the livingvillacapelli.com site. You can press the button and leave us a voicemail, and you'll be on the podcast. And always feel free to send us an email, anything else, and we'll be happy to talk to you. So the other surprise now for Paul. This is the theme of the episode.
Oh, is this like those cooking shows where you give me an ingredient and I have to cook with it?
No, we should do that though. It would be so much fun. Oh, crappy.
Steven just dropped something.
Can you hear? No.
Yes, I can hear you.
You can hear me?
Yes.
I don't hear myself. Oh, sorry. I dropped a little recorder and my earphones came piling out. All right.
So what's the big surprise?
The theme of the show.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this is from a blog post, and I'll link to it, guys, so I give credit to this person. But culinary sins according to proper Italian chefs.
Ooh.
So we're going to go through these. There, this one has 10. I already listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other ones that I'm going to name. But we're going through. I'm sure we'll name some more as we go through. This one I have always heard, and you know, different people do different things. Your Aunt Maria does this one, and I totally disagree with this one. And I think this one's, he's right. Thou shall not add oil to pasta water.
Yeah, I've never done
you
that.
You don't do that. It's a, it throws off the balance of the cooking of the pasta. He says the delicious pasta water should be salty but not oily.
Right.
It's ordered. It's added after you cook the pasta, so it either pasta absorbs it or it becomes like a dressing and part of the sauce.
Yeah, but people put it in because they're afraid the pasta is going to stick while.
But
it's
it doesn't.
Cooking.
But it's not true. It doesn't happen that way. As long as you have enough water, guys, and you stir the pasta a little bit, the pasta will not stick.
You are allowed to stir the pasta while it's cooking.
A little bit, yes. I mean, you don't want to like sit there and stir. You're gonna have all the starch and stuff come out. It's gonna be a clumpy mess. But especially like when you put spaghetti, especially or what's the one you like? I can't think of it.
Spaghettini.
Those really thin pastas. You do need to stir those, otherwise they're just gonna clump together and be one big blob of a big blob of spaghetti log,
yes.
Which you don't want. So make sure in that beginning you want to stir it and get it going. And then as long as you have enough water in the pot, the boiling water and your water's up to a boil, that'll keep your pasta separated. It's not going to stick. You know, right. You stir it every once in a while.
I don't think I've ever put oil in my water.
No, I think that's a really
strange I don't know if this is on there, but also the salt, when you add salt to the water,
yes,
should be added after the first boil of the water. You shouldn't add the salt before the water boils.
Okay, so what's your reason? Because I've heard both of this.
Because it dissolves much more quickly, and adding salt to it will keep the water from boiling faster.
Yes, but once you add the salt, you have to bring it back up to a boil because salted water boils at a higher temperature.
Yes, but it comes up to a boil instantly. It does. I've seen it. I've done it. I've watched
to
it.
To a degree. Okay.
What to what degree? To 68 degrees?
Not instantly.
Yes, instantly.
Okay. I'll disagree on that one. I do add it afterwards, but just because I don't like the idea of salty water being in my pans.
Yeah, I think you added from the beginning because you're always afraid that you're going to do what you normally do, which is you forget to add the salt.
I think the horrible thing is you did add it and you thought you forgot and you added double salt and then you end up with salty pasta, which is gross.
Yeah.
This one is true. Number 9. Thou shall never ever mix cheese and seafood. There are a couple of exceptions here, so this is a disagreement.
Now, we're talking about Italian cooking rules.
Yes, Italian cooking rules. But to that point, I mean, there is one that comes to mind, which is the mussels.
The mussels genovese.
You see.
Right.
Which basically, guys, is mussels that are opened up.
Because what you're basically, but
on the half in, shell, basically.
Yes, but in defense of that, I mean, what you're really doing when you make mussels genovese you're really making a frittata. Right? But it has fish in it.
But this is never ever mixed cheese and seafood. So I mean, to me, that's okay. That's an extreme absolute, and I think there is some exceptions because I want to say
people who make lobster Newburgh would be against this.
Yeah, I mean the biggest.
And also oysters on the oysters Rockefeller
exactly
has cheese, but those aren't Italian dishes. So
okay, I'm trying, but to me the mussel
Genovese
was the biggest one for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I guess to me, but the biggest culprit, guys, with this is which is super sacrilegious. I mean, and it happens to us all the time with guests, and we take them out, and they get a seafood pasta.
Yes,
and then they add they ask for the cheese and they put it over the just.
Right.
Well, I mean, obviously they'll give it to you in the restaurant, but it's just so sacrilegious.
Well, I think two things to say about that. I have two things to say about that.
Okay.
One is that many of us have habits that we have formed over time, and one of them is, especially on any kind of pasta, a lot of people just like to add cheese before they even taste it, the same way they add salt and pepper to a lot of stuff before they taste it. It's just really more of a habit. The other one is that many of these things, whether it's adding cheese to seafood or having a cappuccino after dinner or after
your lunch.
You're
getting ahead of the game.
Okay. Well, no, it's the same concept as kosher and non-kosher. That's really where it comes from. That you're mixing dairy with certain foods just doesn't sit well in your stomach.
Yeah.
And especially dairy, almost mixing it with any kind of food, if it's overdone, just doesn't help you digest. It leaves you kind of bloated.
That's true.
And that's sort of a kosher thing, I believe, although it's not religious.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. I interrupted.
No, you didn't. That's fine. So moving on. We'll move on. This one is very true.
What number is this?
This is number 8. I'll go down for 10. No. Mm-hmm. Number 8. Thou shalt not top pasta with chicken.
What?
No, this is, I mean, as far as what they're saying, chicken parmesan.
Well, there's no such thing as chicken parmesan,
exactly.
First of all. It does not exist in Italy. We have people who have come here from Parma, and when they hear people are making chicken parmesan, they say, what?
What is that? Yeah.
What is that? There's no such thing as chicken parmesan.
No, but he's right, though. But you don't, I don't know personally any real Italian dish featuring pasta and chicken.
No. No, I really don't.
That's what they're saying. Don't top pasta with chicken. That's all they're saying.
Italians really aren't big. Southern Italians, yeah, aren't big chicken eaters.
No.
But, you know, chicken parmesan, as we like to call it here, the more correct name for it, if you're going to do it, is to call it chicken pizzaiola. Because you take your chicken breast, you put cheese and tomato sauce on it, and you cook it that way. And it's really more like the chicken is the base that replaces the pizza dough. So the proper name for it, for me, would be chicken pizzaiola and not chicken parmesan.
Yeah, I'll say too, because when I've heard, and I don't know if it's correct, but when we make eggplant parmesan, mm-hmm. what I do know it as now is it's more of a casserole with layers like a lasagna.
Exactly,
Some people do, and I've seen recipes where it's individual servings basically like that, where you bread the eggplant, then you put the tomato sauce and the cheese, and you kind of have this little, almost like a chicken filet, but instead it's eggplant.
Right.
It's not really chicken parmesan.
No, that would be eggplant pizzaiola.
A pizzaiola, exactly. So I agree with that one. Moving on to number 7.
Number 8. Number 6.
No, number 7. That was number 8. I have it right in front of me.
Sorry.
This is so true. Thou shall not serve bread and butter.
Oh, no.
This just doesn't exist, guys. Basically, they serve bread. And they do not eat the bread and we've talked about this before, dipping in the oil. They just don't do that in Italy. But also, they put the bread on the table, and a lot of tourists will just sit there and eat the bread before their even meal starts. It's there to act as the scarpetta. Did I say it right?
Yes.
The little shoe, which you scoop up your sauce after you've eaten the pasta. So the sauce, or even the meat sauce, whatever it is in your plate, if there's all those juices and you want to get those juices out, you use your bread and you mop that up off the plate.
With a piece of bread. Because it's a lot more civilized than licking your bowl or using a spoon to scoop it up.
Exactly. So that's why you don't do, butter would just not.
Well, it's just
why would you put butter on your bread? It's just for them. That's not the purpose of the bread.
Especially when we are in olive oil culture.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
up north, they do use butter, but
they don't put butter on their bread.
They just don't put it on their bread.
Yeah. No.
Number 6. I didn't know this first part, but so this is interesting. This is news to me. Thou shalt never utter the words spaghetti bolognese or fettuccine Alfredo. Alfredo, I knew.
Well, Alfredo, yes. Fettuccine Alfredo is not an Italian dish.
No, it's an American, Italian-American. But bolognese, they said, no, that's much more, the Italians don't eat spaghetti with bolognese. They use tagliatelle.
Yes. Okay. But
I think that's a really extreme one because I didn't know that. I would have eaten spaghetti with bolognese, but that made us because
I eat ziti and penne with bolognese.
Yeah.
Bolognese is just a different type of ragu at the end
of
the day.
But I did think they did Alfredo sauce up north. Am I wrong?
No. No, I mean, carbonara is more of the real deal. Yeah. Alfredo was created in America.
Yeah.
Just like spaghetti and meatballs.
Well, that's coming up. You keep ruining them all.
Well, I'm sorry, but I know some of the things you're not supposed to do.
Number 5. Next one. Thou shalt not serve spaghetti with meatballs. Spaghetti goes with meatballs. No.
No, it does not.
This dish is an Italian-American, not Italian. Meatballs exist in Italy, but you would not serve them in spaghetti.
No, because what you do is you make your ragu, your sauce, your meat sauce, using different types of meat, you know, lamb, pork, veal. With veal is also, I hope I'm not stepping on your toes here. Veal also in Italy doesn't mean, you know, these animal rights people that come crazy after you because, you know, you're raising calves in a pen. No, veal in Italy just means a calf, a young steer. So it has nothing to do with how they're raised. It just has to do with the age of the meat.
That's
the
what
animal.
I always thought it was. That's always been my definition.
No, in the States, everyone thinks they keep it tender by keeping it in the cage so it doesn't move. That's not the case here in Italy. So you make your ragu and you let it cook, you know, for as many hours as you possibly can until you see a strata or stratum of oil that builds on top. That's when you know it's ready and it becomes kind of dark. It's not red anymore. It's deep, deep red.
Yeah, like a maroon. Almost.
Exactly. And so then you use the liquid part, the ragu, the sauce, to dress the pasta.
Yeah.
And then after you've eaten the pasta, you eat all the pieces of meat that were in the ragu, which are chunks of, you know, veal, pork, lamb, and meatballs.
But I will say also, the meatballs you can find sometimes in a pasta forno. So they will have little tiny meatballs. Why? Well, I mean, in what sense, though? I mean,
because pasta al forno is not spaghetti and meatballs.
No, I agree. Okay, yes, I know that. Yeah. I'm just saying, though, how they use meatballs.
Yes.
That's how another way they use meatballs is more of like a little surprise of meat in your pasta forno, which basically, guys, is what Americans probably think of as like a casserole. It's basically any kind of pasta with sauce.
It's like a lasagna, but using other types of pasta.
Exactly.
Lasagna
is technically a pasta forno.
Yes.
It's pasta made in the oven.
Right. Pasta al forno.
See. Moving on. This is number four, and this one, guys, happened to us, and I still can't believe it happened to us, but it was with not Americans, so thank goodness. But number four, thou shalt never, for the love of all things pure and holy, consider ketchup on pasta.
Oh, no.
This happened to us. It was with the Swedes. I'll just name them. I won't name specifics of who they were, because some of you guys might know the family. It's actually well known, but it was actually a tomato sauce based pasta. I think it was a ragu, and they asked for ketchup, for the kids to put ketchup on their pasta on top of the tomato. It was just disgusting. I mean, I just, you know, hey, their customers always right. They want the ketchup, and for some odd reason, I think because a former guest had bought the ketchup to put in the fridge, because we don't ever have ketchup.
No.
So it happened to be in the fridge.
Because ketchup is full of sugar. I mean, it's just not sweet.
It's just disgusting.
But I think it comes down to the same thing as putting cheese on seafood or putting cheese on everything. So I think some people are just raised, and it's kids especially, love the sweetness of ketchup. And, you know, they just get used to putting it on anything they eat. You know, this is my pet peeve, and I know a lot of people do it. I can't stomach it. Ketchup on scrambled eggs.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. Absolutely.
I've heard of Tabasco, but not
No. Ketchup,
My brother still does. He puts ketchup on all. I mean, he used to put on his macaroni and cheese, which
is so gross.
Oh. I haven't had ketchup in probably 20 years easily. I used to put it on my meat all the time. And it's just like, why would I cover my meat with ketchup now? I
mean, the only taste that really gives it is sweetness. Although I have to admit, though, it's not bad on a burger.
Okay,
you
know what? I probably have it on a burger. I'm probably very incorrect in that. I've had it on a burger.
But I would rather have our sun-dried tomato spread on a burger than ketchup.
We tried calling it that, guys, at one point, but people still didn't quite get it. We tried calling it sun-dried tomato ketchup.
Yeah.
The spread. And it was like, well, wait, what? I mean, is it sweet? And it's like, yes, it's naturally sweet because it doesn't
because
have...
Because at the end of the day, the ketchup today doesn't even have sugar in it. It has corn syrup, which is really like the most evil thing in the planet.
But that's a good little plug, guys. If you guys are looking for something without any sugar added, like corn syrup and all
and lots
of
tomato taste.
Yes. Try the sun-dried tomato spread on your burger. It's amazing.
Either the non-spicy or the spicy. Yeah. The spicy is actually really awesome.
But it actually has it has the natural sweetness because the tomato, it's condensed, you know, sun-dried. So it's dried down and then it's spreadable and it has, garlic, a little bit of olive oil in there. So it gives you this, it's amazing flavor on your burger.
Yes, yes.
Number three, I totally agree with this one. And I forgot about this one, actually, which is interesting. Thou shalt never treat pasta as a side dish, which a lot of restaurants do this, where it comes with your meal and then you get, and you get a side of spaghetti. Somebody's famous for it. I forget who.
I don't know. I think a lot of places do it.
Like the Applebee's or something like that do it.
Which is why in Italy, when you sit down to eat, you usually have basically, two courses.
Yeah.
Your primo, which is the pasta course. And then you have your second course, which is what we would call the main course, which is meat or fish or whatever. So you don't need to have, I think what that also comes down to is one of the big differences in the way we eat in Italy and the way we eat in America, in the States. In Italy, we usually eat things separately. You put your pasta on your dish and you eat that, then you move on to the next course or the next dish. If you're going to eat chicken or veal or lamb or fish, whatever, you eat that and then you put the condiments on the plate after that. You don't put different stuff on the same plate at the same time. Right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
We like to taste the flavors of every individual thing that we're going to eat.
This reminds me, though, I remember it kind of goes back to, which is a lot of places also serve macaroni and cheese as a side, which is the same principle. I think that's why we've gotten to that. I think it's Olive Garden actually does this. So if you order.
And now that's Italian.
Exactly. So if you order like something that's not a pasta dish as your main course in Olive Garden, I think they give you a side of like spaghetti. It comes with it. It's just weird.
How about the people? They may have been Swedes also that totally grossed me out. You serve the pasta, the spaghetti or whatever, with that, whatever kind of topping or condiment we had with it. And they would then take the salad, put the salad on top of the pasta, mix it all up, and eat the pasta with the salad all at the same time.
Because we never served the salad. That's coming up. I know it's my notes, but that's coming up. We never served the salad with the pasta. Kept it?
Yes.
Oh, that's really weird.
Yep.
I don't remember that at all. I think it must have totally blocked that out of my memory.
Or maybe we didn't serve it. They may have made it themselves, and they put everything on the table at the same time.
I think that's what it was. I think
they
maybe.
Mixed a fresh green salad, with olive oil
really
and vinegar
weird.
There, on top of the pasta, mixed it all together, and then ate it.
I mean, I guess, but even a pasta salad doesn't have lettuce in it.
No.
It's just a pasta salad. That's really weird. No, but it just reminds me, too, of like...
And Italy does not have pasta salad.
But talking about America and then mom and dad, because you don't listen to the podcast, I tried to get to listen so I can talk about them now.
They're in Texas. They're in Texas.
I tried, and my dad's like, I can't sit down for half an hour and listen to that. Oh, my gosh. But I went home. This is probably 3 years ago now. We're going back home, and, they were going to pick up... We're going to pick up a rotisserie chicken. And they're like, well, what kind of vegetable do you want? I'm like, I don't know. I'll look around the store and find something. They're like, well, do you want potatoes? And I'm like, well, technically, potatoes really aren't a vegetable. They're more of kind of like a starch. What about corn? I'm like, kind of the same thing. It's a starch. They're like, okay, what about macaroni and cheese? I was like, just stop. Just stop talking. That is not a vegetable.
Wasn't it Ronald Reagan way back when we were talking about school lunches who declared that it's, if you want to give kids a vegetable in their school lunch, ketchup is a vegetable.
Exactly. Oh. All right. Let's move on. This one we've covered many times, guys, I think, and Paul already mentioned it. Thou shalt never consume a cappuccino at any time except for breakfast. Mm-hmm. This again goes back to, I think we've talked about this, how they don't think that heavy milk sits well in your stomach. It doesn't aid in digestion. So for them, it's kind of a, it's almost like a meal in itself. That's why they eat it for breakfast. And if you actually, in Tuscany, it is a sort of meal. They
have a big bowl of caffè latte.
Yeah.
Which is another discussion we're going to have another time about Starbucks and people ordering latte.
Yeah.
But it's called caffè latte. And you break up, you know, the povera, the cucina povera, the poor cooking, what we all grew up with here in Italy, is that, you know, you didn't really, except for special occasions, you would have biscuits, you know, cookies that you could put into the into your warm coffee and milk, which is espresso and milk, lots of milk, a little espresso. But you would break up chunks of day-old bread to put in there, and that's what you would eat as your breakfast.
Yeah.
But cappuccino, again, I think it goes back to the same issues as kosher cooking, because even kosher stuff, if you think about it, really doesn't have as much to do with religion as much as it has to do with the environment where they were living, in the desert, the heat, all that kind of stuff that just kind of makes your stomach go wah, wah.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Although I still put, I have a little bit of milk in my coffee still.
But no, milk in your coffee is fine.
A macchiato is what I have.
Yes.
See, but, so we've talked about that one. This one, last one, I'm learning this one, especially with Paul's mom living here, even though I try to sneak my own little stuff in here and I still do. Thou shalt never disrespect tradition.
Oh, my God.
Nana knows best.
Yes.
She learned the recipes from her Nana, who learned it from her Nana, who learned it from her Nana. So it's tried and tested, and nobody is a better Italian chef than Nana.
That's right.
And that's true.
My mother is like crazy about this stuff.
Oh, my gosh. No matter what we eat, even no matter what we make.
These young people, they want to change everything.
Yeah.
They want to change everything.
Well, it's just funny because she'll like, we didn't make it that way.
Right.
We didn't make it that way. We never put garlic in the tomato sauce. No, never. No,
yeah, because I mean they're not into experimenting.
Yeah.
You know, it's tried and true. It's fine just the way it is. Don't do anything to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't know what your other things that you're going to put in here, but you know, a lot of people here tell us, you know, you don't cook with garlic and onions. It's one or the other.
No, I didn't know that. I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'm sacrilegious. I didn't even know
absolutely.
I'm a sinner.
You're a heathen.
Oh, my gosh. That's like one of my holy, that's my holy trinity. Olive oil, onions, and garlic.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I start them every meal with that.
it's what I call the usual suspects.
Exactly.
When you're starting any sauce. But, you know, I made ragu the other day that, you know, I asked my mom, okay, mom, how do you want me to do it? You know, because she does make amazing ragu.
No, the ragu is good. No,
it's amazing.
That recipe is on the website, guys, by the way. I'll put it into it. Oh, we're going to pause. Okay, and we're back.
So my mom told me, you know, how to make her ragu. And I said, okay, so how do I start it? What do I have to, you know, cook first? Put in a little bit of olive oil in the pan. And chop up an onion. I said, okay, and what else? What do you mean, what else? That's it. You just, olive oil and an onion. I said, don't you put like garlic or, you know, celery, or because she's
or
crazy
anchovy,
about celery.
Or anchovy.
Or anchovy.
Yeah.
No, just an onion, okay? So you do that. You put in your oil. You let the onions brown a little bit. And then you add your tomato. You add your meat. Let that brown in there. Mm-hmm. And then you add some tomato conserve, right?
Yeah.
You know, a tomato paste.
Yeah.
And then you let that cook a little bit, and then you add all your, jarred tomato sauce.
Yes.
But I was shocked, and it came out, I have to admit it, came out great.
No, it's very good. I mean, she's the one who taught me to make the ragu. That's why it's called Connie's Ragu on the website.
Oh, okay.
Yep. But actually, we're going to start a new segment, guys. Hopefully, you're excited for us. We're going to be cooking with Connie.
Yes.
So we're gonna start recording Paul's mother. She's gonna give us cooking lessons.
Oh my God!
I know. It'll be fun.
I don't want to be in the room.
No, I'll do it. It'll be fun. No, you'll love it. Okay, so these are the other ones I came up with here. And you can agree. This one we've already talked about the last episode, actually, so I'm not going to dwell too much on this. But the first one is, with true balsamic, you never put this on salads.
No.
We talked about that. It's too good. Use the molasses vinegar crap. That's for your salads, but that's not what it's for.
But we should explain to people that, the balsamic, quote unquote, balsamic vinegar that you buy in the store is not much different than the Parmesan cheese you buy in a store.
Exactly.
It's not, Parmesan cheese is not Parmigiano, and balsamic vinegar that you buy, that costs a couple of bucks for a bottle or a couple of bucks for a big container at Costco, is not balsamic vinegar. That stuff is made with molasses to make it sweeter. It is not aged. Yes. So do not be fooled. That kind of stuff, that if you want to, you can put it on your salad and everything else.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
But true aged balsamic vinegar is not used for that. True aged balsamic vinegar is used in drops on cheese, on desserts, on ice cream, on strawberries.
And a very special salad, I guess you could put it.
No, you can't. No.
All right. I'm stopping. But that's. I'm just saying. We covered this last time.
So you go broke.
That's true. No, it's
true.
Bottle
costs you $100.
No, not that much. Not ours, guys. Look on the website. Not that I barely make pennies on that one because it's already expensive for us. So I knew I wanted to make it affordable for you guys. And since we don't make
you can taste what real balsamic vinegar
and we really love these guys that we buy it from. So we want to support them. So that's kind of how we do it. the next one from my list is, there is no such thing. And maybe you guys the Neapolitans might disagree with me. I think, no such thing as thick crust pizza.
I can say it. The thick crust pizza. That's Chicago.
Yeah, it's just, but I mean, that's all I grew up with, the Pizza Hut pizza, which was that giant, I mean, it's 90% bread, and then...
Thick crust pizza in Italy is called focaccia.
That's true, yeah.
So there's a big difference. Focaccia is more of a bread that you eat with...
But they don't top it with tomato sauce and cheese.
No, not tomato sauce.
They do tomatoes.
Fresh tomatoes squeezed on top,
yeah,
yes.
So they never do tomato sauce. It just doesn't exist. I mean, guys, here, it's always thin crust. And I might be a little bit biased here, but it is so much better when it's thin crust. It's not about the bread. It's about then all the ingredients going together. Right. It's a little bit of bread with the tomato sauce and the cheese, and then you're a little bit of toppings, obviously, because it's so thin crust, you can't do too many toppings. So all those meld together and balance the thing, whereas the thick crust to me is, it's just all you're tasting is bread. It's just...
Because the bread or the bottom part they used on pizza, think of it as a carrier, not different, I hate to say it, as from a Ritz cracker. A Ritz cracker is a carrier.
Yes.
So you just want to put a light, thin piece on the bottom with a nice, crispy, crunchy border on it. But it's all about the flavors of stuff you put on top, and not the bread itself.
I'll post my recipe for the pizza crust. It's actually a pretty good recipe. I forget where I got it, I'll attribute it to them.
Don't forget that a lot of restaurants or pizza places that serve thick crust pizza, a lot of that is just based on
they want to fill you
profit.
Up. Exactly. They want to fill you up.
Exactly. It costs a lot less to make bread than it does to put all the toppings on it.
Exactly. My next one is that you do never ever eat the salad first. Mm. That's another cardinal sin here in Italy. It's about digestion again.
Mm-hmm.
The salad at the end, the roughage helps you digest.
Pushes everything down.
I mean, I looked for this until my eyes were getting cross-eyed on Google. So if anybody else knows if this is true or not, but somebody told me this and it sounded very logical that in America, you used to eat the salad first, but then when World War II came along, in order to have you fill up first and eat less of your meal, the meat and everything else, they pushed eating the salad first. So that's why now in America, during the war, it became tradition to eat the salad first in order to try to fill you up. And that's the reason it switched. But I could not find anything on that line. I thought that would be very... It's fascinating. It makes a total sense.
And I would love to hear from people on the whole discussion of pizza itself. you know, is pizza really from Naples, or is it an American thing that when the people from Naples came to America and really started pushing pizza, did it then come back to Naples as the, you know, the quintessential Neapolitan dish? Because I'm not sure that pizza is really an Italian
dish.
It may be more of an Italian-American thing, but that's another thing that's hard to find out.
It's interesting, yeah. We need a food historian like Alton Brown has.
Yes. Alton, are you listening?
Yes. I doubt he's listening, but hey, Alton, if you are, give us the number of your food historian. Or they're not called food historians. They're called...
food anthropologists.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yes, it's food anthropologists. That's what it's called.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're actually people who are in the
Logan, my son, actually... one of his courses at Brooklyn College was about food anthropology.
Oh, see, it's so cool. Yeah, yeah. It's why he wanted the recipe, I guess.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I gave him the focaccia recipe. Yeah. Cool. Okay, my last one, or maybe my last one. I'm pausing other ones. What is this one? This is kind of goes back to the salad thing again, which is any dressing on your salad must only be oil and vinegar. I don't even know if you can buy it in the stores. Ranch dressing, French dressing, Thousand Island.
In Italy?
Yeah, in Italy. No.
I don't think so.
It's just the only dressing on your salad is oil and vinegar.
And Stephen.
And talk about healthy.
Stephen is the biggest sinner of this. Stephen likes to make, you know, fancy dressings for his salad.
No,
yes,
no.
You do.
For me, yes, because, and also because, guys, this goes back to my point of like, my taste buds get a little tired and I want something different.
But salad, again, salad in Italy is used also the same way that we use sorbet in America between courses. It cleanses your palate at the end of the meal as well as the roughage that helps you digest.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you add sugar and all that other stuff to it, you haven't really done a good job.
That's interesting. I wonder if that kind of goes back to
Especially the vinegar. The vinegar really just cleans everything out.
Yeah, but I wonder if that's why you wouldn't in the beginning. It's easier because you haven't had that meal. It's easier to add the heavy dressings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but because it becomes another real course.
Yeah. Which is true too. Here they don't do which. So, man, I don't know. This is not necessarily true. You can correct me. They only don't do side salads. Sometimes they do in the States here. It just doesn't exist. Again, it's usually afterwards. It's like, again, usually we have guests that sometimes want a side salad or a salad, and they order it, and it's usually really sad. It's usually a couple leaves of iceberg lettuce with some shredded carrots on it. And
although I have to admit, there's nothing better in this world for me than either a Caesar salad or a nice fresh green salad with lots of crumbled blue cheese on it.
I love salad. We just don't eat enough salads. I love salads.
Yeah. But we're growing a lot of it in our garden.
Yes, that's true. Which, I guess, that's a good recommendation. If you want to grow something in your garden, you're looking at lettuce is amazing to grow in your garden.
Even in the winter.
Yes.
It's a winter thing. Because here in southern Italy, you really can't grow it in your garden in summer because it gets too hot.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else? Do you have any other sins?
No, not really. I think we covered most of them.
Most of them, right?
I mean, when you have coffee, you should have espresso, not American coffee. We call it dirty dishwater.
Yeah. Oh, if you ask for an Americano, we should do a whole thing on coffee.
But again, the reason, there are two reasons I think why Italians don't like American coffee, and both of them I think are valid. One is there's not much taste of real coffee in it because it's mostly water, and the second one is, it's just too filling. I mean, having a big cup of coffee after all that meal is just like, how long is it going to take me to finish this coffee?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when you go to Starbucks and you get a venti, think about it. Venti is 20 ounces of coffee.
It's a
20
lot of
ounces.
Coffee. I know. It's a lot of coffee.
Yeah, where an espresso is like, what, 3 ounces maybe? Two?
Yeah.
20 ounces, it's like you're adding just all this, putrefied water into your stomach after you've had this beer.
Oh, it's not that. All the Starbucks is close to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that wraps us up for this episode, guys. I will say, please, guys, hit subscribe on your iPod player, whatever you're listening to us with, because this is a good point. There's actually been a lot of technical difficulties lately with iTunes, and it's not pushing out episodes to people who aren't subscribed. If you're subscribed, you're okay. You'll get these new episodes, but hopefully it'll be resolved soon, because I know our last episode is still not up, and I've issued some complaints to Crickets, but so make sure you hit the subscribe button on whatever you're listening to us.
And there are two websites to remember. One is audible.com.
/Capelli. No, oh no, Audible Trial. Sorry. Audibletrial.com. Audibletrial.com/Capelli.
/.
Oh, whatever. People know what.
Okay. Anyway, so it's audibletrial.com. AUDIBLE.
Yes.
.com/. Villa Capelli.
No, just Capelli.
Just Capelli. Audible.com, Capelli, /Capelli.
Audible Trial.
Audible Trial.
Oh my gosh, this is horrible. Let's start all over. Okay. We're starting all over.
Okay, we're starting all over. Go to audibletrial.com/Capelli.
Yes.
And download books. They have how many?
180,000.
180,000 books. That should be good for the summer.
Yes, you'll get a free book and a free 30-day trial.
And it's the best way to get into books.
Yep, no, basically. It's cool. No, especially if you're driving around. If everybody's interested in podcasting, it's another great option for people who want to just. I mean, I listen to a couple of them when I'm around cleaning the villa and just making labels on products. It's a great way to listen to books.
Yes.
And I will put links to that, guys, as well as all the other notes on this episode. And those will live at livingvillacapelli/32. So livingvillacapelli/32 for those links if you missed it and anything else you might need from the episode. And then remember villacapelli.com.
Yes.
That'll take you everywhere. You'll see the stuff up for the podcast. You'll see a link to if you want to come visit us at the villa, stay at the villa. And you'll find us on all the social media at villacapelli.com. Oh, look for us there, guys. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so, so much. Mm-hmm. And audibletrial.com/Capelli. I'm going there as soon as we get off this microphone.
All right. Thanks, guys. Arrivederci.
Ciao.